Chapter 42, 8 and 23. Washington, January 3, 8 and 23. To the Senate of the United States. In compliance with the 3 resolutions of the Senate of the 5th April, 8 and 22, requesting the President of the United States to communicate in detail the expenses of building each vessel of war authorized by the Act of the 2nd of January, 8 and 13, and its supplements, and also the names, number, grade, etc., of the officers and men employed at each Navy Yard and Naval Station during the 2 years immediately preceding the 1st of January, 8 and 22, I herewith transmit a report from the Secretary of the Navy, with the accompanying documents, which contains the desired information. James Monroe, Washington, January 3, 8 and 23. To the House of Representatives of the United States. In compliance with the resolutions of the House of Representatives of the 8th of January, the 7th of May, and the 17th of December, 8 and 22, requesting the President of the United States to cause to be laid before that House a detailed statement of the current expenses of the Ordnance Department for the years 1817, 1818, 1819, 1820, and 1821, and as much as can be shown for the year 1822, and also the number and local position of each of the armories, arsenals, and magazines of the United States, the total expense of constructing and repairing the same up to the year 1821, the number of cannon and other arms annually made at each, and the expenses of each armory and arsenal for each year from 1816 to 1821, inclusive, I herewith transmit a report from the Secretary of War, accompanied by such documents, as will be found to contain the desired information. James Monroe, Washington, January 3, 8 and 23. To the House of Representatives of the United States. In compliance with the resolution of the House of Representatives of the United States of the 19th of December, 8 and 22, requesting the President of the United States to cause to be laid before that House the several laws which have been made by the Governor and Legislative Council of Florida, together with such information as may be in the possession of the Executive, I herewith transmit a report from the Secretary of State, with the accompanying documents, which contains the information desired. James Monroe, Washington, January 6, 8 and 23. To the House of Representatives of the United States. In compliance with the resolution of the House of Representatives of the 19th of December last, requesting the President of the United States to communicate to the House the progress which has been made in the execution of the act of the last session entitled An Act to Abolish the Indian Trading Establishments, with a report from the factories, respectively, as the same were made to him, I transmit a report from the Secretary of the Treasury, with the documents referred to by that resolution. In further execution of the act of the last session, treaties have since been made with the Osage and Sac Indians, by which those tribes have severally relinquished to the United States their right under preceding treaties to the maintenance of a factory within each, respectively. James Monroe, January 6, 8 and 23. To the Senate. I transmit to the Senate, for their advice and consent as to the ratification, treaties which have been made with the Osage and Sac tribes of Indians in execution of the provision contained in the act of the last session entitled An Act to Abolish the Indian Trading Establishments. James Monroe, Washington, January 10, 8 and 23. To the Senate of the United States. in compliance with a resolution of the Senate requesting the President of the United States to cause to be laid before the Senate the number of arms required annually to supply the militia of the West according to acts of Congress, the probable number necessary to be placed in military deposits located or to be located in the Western waters, the cost of transportation of arms to the Western states and deposits, the probable cost of manufacturing arms in the West, the probable cost of erecting at this time in the Western waters such an armory as that at Harper's Ferry or at Springfield, and such other information as he may deem important to establish the expediency of erecting on the Western waters a national armory, I herewith transmit a report from the Secretary of War containing the desired information. James Monroe, Washington, January 16, 1823. The Vice President of the United States and President of the Senate. The convention concluded and signed at St. Petersburg on the 21st of July last under the mediation of His Imperial Majesty the Emperor of all the Russias having been ratified by the three powers parties thereto, and the ratifications of the same having been duly exchanged, copies of it are now communicated to Congress, to the end that the measures for carrying it on the part of the United States into execution may obtain the cooperation of the legislature necessary to the accomplishment of some of its provisions. A translation is subjoined of three explanatory documents, in the French language, referred to in the fourth article of the convention and annexed to it. The agreement executed at the exchange of the ratifications is likewise communicated. James Monroe. Left square bracket. The same message was addressed to the Speaker of the House of Representatives. Right square bracket. January 22, 1823. To the Senate of the United States. In compliance with a resolution of December 12, 1822, requesting that the President would cause to be laid before the Senate a statement exhibiting the amount in aggregate of the goods, wares, and merchandise exported from the United States to France, and imported from thence, in each year from and after the year 1814 to the year 1820, discriminating in the reports between the articles of the growth, produce, or manufacture of the United States and those of foreign countries, and also stating the national character of the vessels in which such exports and imports have been made, I transmit a report from the Secretary of the Treasury, which contains the information desired. James Monroe. January 22, 1823. To the Senate and House of Representatives. In carrying fully into effect the intention of Congress in making an appropriation of $5,000 by the Act of the 14th April, 1820, for the survey of the Ohio and the Mississippi rivers from the rapids of the Ohio at Louisville to the Belize, for the purpose of facilitating and ascertaining the most practicable route of improving the navigation of these rivers, orders were given through the proper department to the Board of Engineers to examine and survey the said rivers with reference to those objects, and to report their opinion thereon, which they have done, and which report I now communicate for the information of Congress. James Monroe. Washington, January 25, 1823. To the House of Representatives. I transmit herewith to the House of Representatives a report from the Secretary of State, together with the documents which contain the information requested by the resolution of the House of the 10th of December last, relating to the establishment at the mouth of Columbia River. James Monroe. To the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States. I transmit herewith a letter from the Secretary of the Navy, containing one from Captain John Rogers, President of the Naval Board, accompanied by a description of the inclined plane, dock, and fixtures for hauling up ships, and an estimate of the cost and materials and workmanship necessary for the completion of a dock and wharves, proposed to be connected with the inclined plane constructed at the Navy Yard, Washington, and recommend the same to the attentive consideration of Congress. It is confidently believed that this invention combines advantages so highly useful as to justify the appropriation required. James Monroe. January 28, 1823. February 3, 1823. To the Senate of the United States. Having lately received a memorial from the Legislative Council of the Territory of Florida in subjects very interesting to the inhabitants of the territory and also to the United States, which require legislative provision, I transmit the same to Congress and recommend it to their consideration. James Monroe. Left square bracket. The same message was addressed to the Speaker of the House of Representatives. Right square bracket. Washington, February 3, 1823. To the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States. I transmit herewith the resolution of the legislature, with an extract of a letter from the Governor of Georgia, and a memorial of the Legislature of Missouri, relative to the extinguishment of the Indian title to lands within the limits of these states, respectively. Believing the present time to be propitious for holding treaties for the attainment of cessions of land from the Indians within those states, I submit the subject to the consideration of Congress, that adequate appropriations for such treaties may be made should Congress deem it expedient. James Monroe. February 4, 1823. To the House of Representatives of the United States. In compliance with the resolution of the House of Representatives of the 12th of December last, requesting the President to communicate to the House such information as he might possess with regard to any expedition prepared in the United States and having sailed from thence within the year 1822 against the territory or dependency of any power in amity with the United States, and to inform the House whether any measures have been taken to bring to condign punishment persons who have been concerned in such expedition. Contrary to the laws, I transmit to the House reports from the Secretaries of State and of the Treasury, with the documents mentioned in each. Those documents contain all the information in possession of the Executive relating to the subject of the resolution. That a force of a very limited extent has been equipped in the ports of the United States and sailed from thence for the purpose described in the resolution is manifest from the documents now communicated. The reports from the collectors of Philadelphia and New York will show in what manner this equipment escaped their notice. The first information of this equipment was received from St. Bartholomew's, the place of its rendezvous. This was confirmed afterwards from Caracalla with an account of its failure. Should any of those persons return within the jurisdiction of the United States, care will be taken that the laws applicable to such offenses are duly enforced against them. Whether any aid was afforded by others to the parties engaged in this unlawful and contemptible adventure in the ports in which it was planned, inconsistent with ordinary commercial transactions and contrary to the laws of the United States, will be referred to the Attorney General, in whose advice any measures in regard to them will depend. James Monroe. February 6, 1823. To the House of Representatives. In compliance with the resolution of the House of Representatives of the 28th of January last, requesting information whether the treaty concluded with the Choctaw Nation of Indians on the 18th of October, 1820, has been executed so far as respects the cession of certain lands to said nation west of the river Mississippi, and if possession has been given of the lands ceded to them, if not, that he assign the reasons which prevented the immediate execution of the stipulations of said treaty, and whether the difficulties have diminished or increased by the delay in its execution, I communicate a report from the Secretary of War, with the documents referred to in it. James Monroe, February 10, 1823, to the Senate of the United States. In compliance with a resolution of the Senate of February 3, requesting a statement of the number and size of cannon, mortars, and howitzers necessary for the armament of the fortifications already built and intended to be built, with an estimate of the sum necessary for their construction, I transmit a report from the Secretary of War, prepared in execution of instructions given him to that effect. James Monroe, Washington, February 14, 1823. To the House of Representatives of the United States. In compliance with the resolution of the House of Representatives of 22nd January last, requesting the communication to the House of all the correspondence between the governments of the United States and Great Britain relating to the negotiation of the Convention of the 20th of October, 1818, which may not be inconsistent with the public interest, I transmit herewith to the House a report from the Secretary of State, together with the papers requested by the resolution of the House. James Monroe, February 14, 1823. To the Senate of the United States. In compliance with the resolution of the Senate of the 11th of this month, requesting the President to cause to be communicated to the Senate an estimate of the amount of land in the state of Georgia to which the Indian title has been extinguished by the United States, since the cession of a portion of the territory of Georgia to the United States, with a statement of the cost of such extinguishment, and also an estimate of the amount of land within the said state to which the Indian title still remains to be extinguished, and by what tribes claimed, I transmit a report from the Secretary of War, which contains the information desired. James Monroe, February 17, 1823. To the House of Representatives of the United States. In compliance with the resolution of the House of Representatives of the 17th of December, requesting the President to communicate to the House a statement of the amount expended for the current expenses of the Ordnance Department during the years 1817, 1818, 1819, 1820, and 1821, and as much as can be shown for the year 1822, with the items for which the money was expended, the place where and the persons to whom paid, what quantity of timber has been procured for gun carriages and caissons, its cost annually, and where deposited, the quantity of ordnance of every kind that has been procured during those years or paid for, and the whole amount of arms of every description now belonging to the United States, the sum expended in the purchase of sites for arsenals since the peace, the cost of the buildings erected thereon, and whether all those arsenals are necessary for the service of the United States, I transmit a report from the Secretary of War, with the documents mentioned therein, which contains the information desired. James Monroe, Washington, February 18, 1823. The Vice President of the United States and President of the Senate. The Convention of Navigation and Commerce between the United States of America and His Majesty the King of France and Navarre, concluded and signed at Washington on the 24th of June, 1822, with the first separate article thereto annexed, having been ratified by the two parties, and the ratifications of the same having been duly exchanged, copies of it and of the separate article referred to are now communicated to the two houses of Congress, to the end that the necessary measures for carrying it into execution in the part of the United States may be adopted by the legislature. James Monroe, left square bracket. The same message was sent to the House of Representatives, right square bracket. February 19, 1823. To the House of Representatives of the United States.
In compliance with a resolution of the House of Representatives of the 11th of December last, I transmit to the House a report from the Secretary of the Treasury, containing the information requested, of the amount of monies advanced to agents, subagents, contractors, subcontractors, or individuals, since the 1st of January, 1817, which have not been accounted for on settlement, and of the loss sustained in each case, the sureties taken, and the names of the sureties. James Monroe, Washington, February 19, 1823. To the House of Representatives of the United States. I transmit to the House of Representatives, in pursuance of a resolution of that House of the 31st of last month, a report from the Secretary of State, relative to the commissioners appointed for the purpose of ascertaining the titles and claims to land in Florida. James Monroe, February 19, 1823. To the House of Representatives of the United States. I transmit to the House of Representatives an additional report from the Secretary of the Treasury, with the documents referred to therein, containing further information of the proceedings in execution of the law of the last session respecting the trade with the Indian tribes, called for by the resolution of the 19th of December last. James Monroe, February 22, 1823. To the House of Representatives of the United States. In compliance with the resolution of the House of Representatives of the 11th of this month, requesting information, whether any prize agents have neglected to render an account of their agency and to pay over the money in their hands, the names of those who have failed, the sums unaccounted for, and whether any of those thus failing are in the employ of the government, and their compensation has been in consequence suspended, I transmit a report from the Secretary of the Navy, with the documents referred to by him. James Monroe, February 25, 1823. To the Congress of the United States. I transmit to Congress the general returns of the militia of the several states and territories for the year 1822, with an account of the arms, accoutrements, ammunition, ordnance, etc., belonging to each as far as the returns have been received, in compliance with the provision of the Act of 1803. James Monroe, February 25, 1823. To the Senate of the United States.
By a resolution of the 27th of December last, the President of the United States was requested to communicate to the Senate such information as he might possess respecting the political state of the island of St. Domingo, whether the government thereof was claimed by any European nation, what our commercial relations with the government of the island were, and whether any further commercial relations with that government would be consistent with the interest and safety of the United States. From the import of the resolution it is inferred that the Senate were fully aware of the delicate and interesting nature of the subject embraced by it in all its branches. The call supposes something peculiar in the nature of the government of that island and in the character of its population, to which attention is due. Impressed always with an anxious desire to meet every call of either house for information, I most willingly comply in this instance and with a view to the particular circumstances alluded to. In adverting to the political state of St. Domingo, I have to observe that the whole island is now united under one government, under a constitution which retains the sovereignty in the hands of the people of color, and with provisions which prohibit the employment in the government of all white persons who have emigrated there since 1816, or who may hereafter emigrate there, and which prohibit also the acquisition by such persons of the right of citizenship or to real estate in the island. In the exercise of this sovereignty, the government has not been molested by any European power. No invasion of the island has been made or attempted by any power. It is, however, understood that the relations between the government of France and the island have not been adjusted, that its independence has not been recognized by France, nor has peace been formally established between the parties. The establishment of a government of people of color in the island in the principles above stated evinces distinctly the idea of a separate interest and a distrust of other nations. Had that jealousy been confined to the inhabitants of the parent country, it would have been less an object of attention, but by extending it to the inhabitants of other countries with whom no difference ever existed, the policy assumes a character which does not admit of a like explanation. To what extent that spirit may be indulged or to what purposes applied, our experience has yet been too limited to enable us to form a just estimate. These are inquiries more peculiarly interesting to the neighboring islands. They nevertheless deserve the attention of the United States. Between the United States and the island, a commercial intercourse exists, and it will continue to be the object of this government to promote it. Our commerce there has been subjected to higher duties than have been imposed in like articles from some other nations. It has nevertheless been extensive, proceeding from the wants of the respective parties and the enterprise of our citizens. Of this discrimination to our injury we had a right to complain and have complained. It is expected that our commercial intercourse with the island will be placed on the footing of the most favored nation. No preference is sought in our favor, nor ought any to be given to others. Regarding the high interest of our happy union and looking to every circumstance which may by any possibility affect the tranquility of any part, however remotely, and guarding against such injury by suitable precautions, it is the duty of this government to promote by all the means in its power and by a fair and honorable policy the best interest of every other part, and thereby of the whole. Feeling profoundly the force of this obligation, I shall continue to exert with unwearied zeal my best faculties to give it effect. James Monroe, Washington, February 26, 1823. To the House of Representatives of the United States. I transmit to the House of Representatives, in pursuance of a resolution of that House of the 30th January last, a report from the Secretary of State, containing the information required in relation to the transactions of the commissioners under the 6th and 7th articles of the Treaty of Ghent, and also as to the measures which have been taken under the 4th article of the Treaty with Spain of the 22nd of February, 1819, for fixing the boundary line described in the 3rd article of the last mentioned treaty. James Monroe, Washington, February 27, 1823. To the House of Representatives. I transmit to the House of Representatives a report from the Secretary of State, made in pursuance of their resolution of the 21st of January last, requesting the President of the United States to cause to be arranged and laid before that House a digest shewing such changes in the commercial regulations of the different foreign countries with which the United States have intercourse, as shall have been adopted and come to the knowledge of the Executive subsequently to the formation of the digest communicated to the Senate in the 7th of December, 1819. James Monroe, Washington, February 28, 1823. To the House of Representatives of the United States. I transmit to the House of Representatives a report from the Secretary of State, with copies of sundry papers which should have been included among those which accompanied my message of the 14th instant, being part of the correspondence with Great Britain relating to the negotiation of the Convention of 20th of October, 1818, but which were accidentally omitted from the papers communicated to the House with that message. James Monroe, Washington, February 28, 1823. To the House of Representatives. In compliance with the resolution of the House of Representatives of the 24th of January, requesting the President to communicate to the House the number of persons and the amount due from each whose compensation has been withheld or suspended, in pursuance of the law prohibiting payments to persons in arrears to the United States, whether the amount withheld has been applied in all cases to the extinguishment of their debts to the government, whether the said laws have been enforced in all cases against securities who are liable for the payment of any arrears to, whether any disbursing officer, within the knowledge of the President, has given conclusive evidence of his insolvency, and, if so, whether he is still retained in the service of the United States, I transmit to the House a report from the Secretary of the Treasury, with the documents mentioned therein. The report has been confined to the operations of the law, respecting the circumstances of individuals in their transactions without the sphere of their public duties. I have no means of information other than those which are common to all. James Monroe, Washington, March 7, 1823. To the House of Representatives of the United States. In compliance with the resolution of the House of Representatives of this day, requesting information of the measures taken with regard to the illegal blockade of the ports of the Spanish Main, and to depredations of privateers fitted out from Puerto Rico and other Spanish islands in the commerce of the United States, I transmit to the House a report from the Secretary of State containing the information required by the resolution. James Monroe, 7th Annual Message, Washington, December 2, 1823. Fellow citizens of the Senate and House of Representatives, many important subjects will claim your attention during the present session, of which I shall endeavor to give, in aid of your deliberations, a just idea in this communication. I undertake this duty with diffidence, from the vast extent of the interests in which I have to treat and of their great importance to every portion of our Union. I enter on it with zeal from a firm conviction that there never was a period, since the establishment of our Revolution when, regarding the condition of the civilized world and its bearing on us, there was greater necessity for devotion in the public servants to their respective duties, or for virtue, patriotism, and union in our constituents. Meeting in you a new Congress, I deem it proper to present this view of public affairs in greater detail than might otherwise be necessary. I do it, however, with peculiar satisfaction, from a knowledge that in this respect I shall comply more fully with the sound principles of our government. The people being with us exclusively the sovereign, it is indispensable that full information be laid before them on all important subjects, to enable them to exercise that high power with complete effect. If kept in the dark, they must be incompetent to it. We are all liable to error, and those who are engaged in the management of public affairs are more subject to excitement and to be led astray by their particular interests and passions than the great body of our constituents, who, living at home in the pursuit of their ordinary avocations, are calm but deeply interested spectators of events and of the conduct of those who are parties to them. To the people every department of the government and every individual in each are responsible, and the more full their information the better they can judge of the wisdom of the policy pursued and of the conduct of each in regard to it. From their dispassionate judgment much aid may always be obtained, while their approbation will form the greatest incentive and most gratifying reward for virtuous actions, and the dread of their censure the best security against the abuse of their confidence. Their interests in all vital questions are the same, and the bond, by sentiment as well as by interest, will be proportionably strengthened, as they are better informed of the real state of public affairs, especially in difficult conjunctures. It is by such knowledge that local prejudices and jealousies are surmounted, and that a national policy, extending its fostering care and protection to all the great interests of our Union, is formed and steadily adhered to. A precise knowledge of our relations with foreign powers, as respects our negotiations and transactions with each, is thought to be particularly necessary. Equally necessary is it that we should form a just estimate on our resources, revenue, and progress in every kind of improvement connected with the national prosperity and public defense. It is by rendering justice to other nations that we may expect it from them. It is by our ability to resent injuries and redress wrongs that we may avoid them. The commissioners under the 5th article of the Treaty of Ghent, having disagreed in their opinions respecting that portion of the boundary between the territories of the United States and of Great Britain the establishment of which had been submitted to them, have made their respective reports in compliance with that article, that the same might be referred to the decision of a friendly power. It being manifest, however, that it would be difficult, if not impossible, for any power to perform that office without great delay and much inconvenience to itself, a proposal has been made by this government, and acceded to by that of Great Britain, to endeavor to establish that boundary by amicable negotiation. It appearing from long experience that no satisfactory arrangement could be formed of the commercial intercourse between the United States and the British colonies in this hemisphere by legislative acts, while each party pursued its own course without agreement or concert with the other, a proposal has been made to the British government to regulate this commerce by treaty, as it has been to arrange in like manner the just claim of the citizens of the United States inhabiting the states and territories bordering on the lakes and rivers which empty into the strait, lawrence to the navigation of that river to the ocean. For these and other objects of high importance to the interests of both parties, a negotiation has been opened with the British government, which it is hoped will have a satisfactory result. The commissioners under the 6th and 7th articles of the Treaty of Ghent, having successfully closed their labors in relation to the 6th, have proceeded to the discharge of those relating to the 7th. Their progress in the extensive survey required for the performance of their duties justifies the presumption that it will be completed in the ensuing year. The negotiation which had been long depending with the French government in several important subjects, and particularly for a just indemnity for losses sustained in the late wars by the citizens of the United States under unjustifiable seizures and confiscations of their property, has not, as yet, had the desired effect. As this claim rests in the same principle with others which have been admitted by the French government, it is not perceived in what just ground it can be rejected. A minister will be immediately appointed to proceed to France and resume the negotiation in this and other subjects which may arise between the two nations. At the proposal of the Russian Imperial Government, made through the minister of the Emperor residing here, a full power and instructions have been transmitted to the Minister of the United States at St. Petersburg to arrange by amicable negotiation the respective rights and interests of the two nations in the northwest coast of this continent. A similar proposal had been made by His Imperial Majesty to the Government of Great Britain, which has likewise been acceded to. The government of the United States has been desirous by this friendly proceeding of manifesting the great value which they have invariably attached to the friendship of the Emperor and their solicitude to cultivate the best understanding which has government. In the discussions to which this interest has given rise and in the arrangements by which they may terminate, the occasion has been judged proper for asserting, as a principle in which the rights and interests of the United States are involved, that the American continents, by the free and independent condition which they have assumed and maintain, are henceforth not to be considered as subjects for future colonization by any European powers. Since the close of the last session of Congress, the commissioners and arbitrators for ascertaining and determining the amount of indemnification which may be due to citizens of the United States under the decision of His Imperial Majesty the Emperor of Russia, in conformity to the convention concluded at St. Petersburg on the 12th of July, 1822, have assembled in this city, and organized themselves, as a board for the performance of the duties assigned to them by that treaty. The commission constituted under the 11th article of the treaty of the 22nd of February, 1819, between the United States and Spain is also in session here, and as the term of 3 years limited by the treaty for the execution of the trust will expire before the period of the next regular meeting of Congress, the attention of the legislature will be drawn to the measures which may be necessary to accomplish the objects for which the commission was instituted. In compliance with the resolution of the House of Representatives adopted at their last session, instructions have been given to all the ministers of the United States accredited to the powers of Europe and America to propose the proscription of the African slave trade by classing it under the denomination, and inflicting on its perpetrators the punishment, of piracy. Should this proposal be acceded to, it is not doubted that this odious and criminal practice will be promptly and entirely suppressed. It is earnestly hoped that it will be acceded to, from the firm belief that it is the most effectual expedient that can be adopted for the purpose. At the commencement of the recent war between France and Spain, it was declared by the French government that it would grant no commissions to privateers, and that neither the commerce of Spain herself nor of neutral nations should be molested by the naval force of France, except in the breach of a lawful blockade. This declaration, which appears to have been faithfully carried into effect, concurring with principles proclaimed and cherished by the United States from the first establishment of their independence, suggested the hope that the time had arrived when the proposal for adopting it, as a permanent and invariable rule in all future maritime wars, might meet the favorable consideration of the great European powers. Instructions have accordingly been given to our ministers with France, Russia, and Great Britain to make those proposals to their respective governments, and when the friends of humanity reflect on the essential amelioration to the condition of the human race which would result from the abolition of private war in the sea and in the great facility by which it might be accomplished, requiring only the consent of a few sovereigns, an earnest hope is indulged that these overtures will meet with an attention animated by the spirit in which they were made, and that they will ultimately be successful. The ministers who were appointed to the Republics of Colombia and Buenos Aires during the last session of Congress proceeded shortly afterwards to their destinations. Of their arrival, their official intelligence has not yet been received. The minister appointed to the Republic of Chile will sail in a few days. An early appointment will also be made to Mexico. A minister has been received from Colombia, and the other governments have been informed that ministers, or diplomatic agents of inferior grade, would be received from each, accordingly, as they might prefer the one or the other. The minister appointed to Spain proceeded soon after his appointment for Cadiz, the residence of the sovereign to whom he was accredited. In approaching that port, the frigate which conveyed him was warned off by the commander of the French squadron by which it was blockaded and not permitted to enter, although apprised by the captain of the frigate of the public character of the person whom he had on board, the landing of whom was the sole object of his proposed entry. This act, being considered an infringement of the rights of ambassadors and of nations, will form a just cause of complaint to the government of France against the officer by whom it was committed. The actual condition of the public finances more than realizes the favorable anticipations that were entertained of it at the opening of the last session of Congress. In the 1st of January there was a balance in the treasury of $4,237,427.55. From that time to the 30th of September the receipts amounted to upward of $16,100,000, and the expenditures to $11,400,000. During the fourth quarter of the year it is estimated that the receipts will at least equal the expenditures, and that there will remain in the treasury on the first day of January next a surplus of nearly $9,000,000. In the 1st of January, 1825, a large amount of the war debt and a part of the revolutionary debt become redeemable. Additional portions of the former will continue to become redeemable annually until the year 1835. It is believed, however, that, if the United States remain at peace the whole of that debt may be redeemed by the ordinary revenue of those years during that period under the provision of the Act of March 3, 1817, creating the sinking fund, and in that case the only part of the debt that will remain after the year 1835 will be the $7,000,000 of 5% stock subscribed to the Bank of the United States, and the 3% revolutionary debt, amounting to $13,296,099.06, both of which are redeemable at the pleasure of the government. The state of the army in its organization and discipline has been gradually improving for several years, and has now attained a high degree of perfection. The military disbursements have been regularly made and the accounts regularly and promptly rendered for settlement. The supplies of various descriptions have been of good quality and regularly issued at all of the posts. A system of economy and accountability has been introduced into every branch of the service which admits of little additional improvement. This desirable state has been attained by the Act reorganizing the staff of the Army, passed on the 14th of April, 1818. The monies appropriated for fortifications have been regularly and economically applied, and all the works advanced as rapidly as the amount appropriated would admit. Three important works will be completed in the course of this year, that is, Fort Washington, Fort Delaware, and the fort at the Rigolets, in Louisiana. The Board of Engineers and the Topographical Corps have been in constant and active service in surveying the coast and projecting the works necessary for its defense. The Military Academy has attained a degree of perfection in its discipline and instruction equal, as is believed, to any institution of its kind in any country. The money appropriated for the use of the Ordnance Department has been regularly and economically applied. The fabrication of arms at the National Armories and by contract with the department has been gradually improving in quality and cheapness. It is believed that their quality is now such as to admit of but little improvement. The completion of the fortifications renders it necessary that there should be a suitable appropriation for the purpose of fabricating the cannon and carriages necessary for those works. Under the appropriation of $5,000 for exploring the western waters for the location of a site for a western armory, A commission was constituted, consisting of Colonel McRee, Colonel Lee, and Captain Talcott, who have been engaged in exploring the country. They have not yet reported the result of their labors, but it is believed that they will be prepared to do it at an early part of the session of Congress. During the month of June last, General Ashley and his party, who were trading under a license from the government, were attacked by the Recorrees, while peaceably trading with the Indians at their request. Several of the party were killed and wounded and their property taken or destroyed. Colonel Leavenworth, who commanded Fort Atkinson, at the Council Bluffs, the most western post, apprehending that the hostile spirit of the Recorrees would extend to other tribes in that quarter, and that thereby the lives of the traders in the Missouri and the peace of the frontier would be endangered, took immediate measures to check the evil. With a detachment of the regiment stationed at the bluffs, he successfully attacked the Recorree village, and it is hoped that such an impression has been made in them as well as on the other tribes on the Missouri, as will prevent a recurrence of future hostility. The report of the Secretary of War, which is herewith transmitted, will exhibit in greater detail the condition of the department in its various branches, and the progress which has been made in its administration during the three first quarters of the year. I transmit a return of the militia of the several states according to the last reports which have been made by the proper officers in each to the Department of War. By reference to this return, it will be seen that it is not complete, although great exertions have been made to make it so. As the defense and even the liberties of the country must depend in times of imminent danger in the militia, it is of the highest importance that it be well organized, armed, and disciplined throughout the Union. The report of the Secretary of War shows the progress made during the three first quarters of the present year by the application of the fund appropriated for arming the militia. Much difficulty is found in distributing the arms according to the Act of Congress providing for it from the failure of the proper departments in many of the states to make regular returns. The Act of May 12, 1820, provides that the system of tactics and regulations of the various corps of the regular army shall be extended to the militia. This act has been very imperfectly executed from the want of uniformity in the organization of the militia, proceeding from the defects of the system itself, and especially in its application to that main arm of the public defense. It is thought that this important subject in all its branches merits the attention of Congress. The report of the Secretary of the Navy, which is now communicated, furnishes an account of the administration of that department for the three first quarters of the present year, with the progress made in augmenting the Navy, and the manner in which the vessels in commission have been employed. The usual force has been maintained in the Mediterranean Sea, the Pacific Ocean, and along the Atlantic coast, and has afforded the necessary protection to our commerce in those seas. In the West Indies and the Gulf of Mexico, our naval force has been augmented by the addition of several small vessels, provided for by the Act authorizing an additional naval force for the suppression of piracy, passed by Congress at their last session. That armament has been eminently successful in the accomplishment of its object. The piracies by which our commerce in the neighborhood of the island of Cuba had been afflicted have been repressed and the confidence of our merchants in a great measure restored. The patriotic zeal and enterprise of Commodore Porter, to whom the command of the expedition was confided, has been fully seconded by the officers and men under his command. And in reflecting with high satisfaction in the honorable manner in which they have sustained the reputation of their country and its navy, The sentiment is allied only by a concern that in the fulfillment of that arduous service the diseases incident to the season and to the climate in which it was discharged have deprived the nation of many useful lives, and among them of several officers of great promise. In the month of August a very malignant fever made its appearance at Thompson's Island, which threatened the destruction of our station there. Many perished, and the commanding officer was severely attacked. Uncertain as to his fate and knowing that most of the medical officers had been rendered incapable of discharging their duties, it was thought expedient to send to that post an officer of rank and experience, with several skillful surgeons, to ascertain the origin of the fever and the probability of its recurrence there in future seasons, to furnish every assistance to those who were suffering, and, if practicable, to avoid the necessity of abandoning so important a station. Commodore Rogers, with a promptitude which did him honor, cheerfully accepted that trust, and has discharged it in the manner anticipated from his skill and patriotism. Before his arrival Commodore Porter, with the greater part of the squadron, had removed from the island and returned to the United States in consequence of the prevailing sickness. Much useful information has, however, been obtained as to the state of the island and great relief afforded to those who had been necessarily left there. Although our expedition, cooperating with an invigorated administration of the government of the island of Cuba, and with the corresponding active exertions of a British naval force in the same seas, have almost entirely destroyed the unlicensed piracies from that island, the success of our exertions has not been equally effectual to suppress the same crime, under other pretenses and colors, in the neighboring island of Puerto Rico. They have been committed there under the abusive issue of Spanish commissions. At an early period of the present year remonstrances were made to the governor of that island, by an agent who was sent for the purpose, against those outrages in the peaceful commerce of the United States, of which many had occurred. That officer, professing his own want of authority to make satisfaction for our just complaints, answered only by a reference of them to the government of Spain. The minister of the United States to that court was specially instructed to urge the necessity of the immediate and effectual interposition of that government, directing restitution and indemnity for wrongs already committed and interdicting the repetition of them. The minister, as has been seen, was debarred access to the Spanish government, and in the meantime several new cases of flagrant outrage have occurred, and citizens of the United States in the island of Puerto Rico have suffered, and others been threatened with assassination for asserting their unquestionable rights even before the lawful tribunals of the country. The usual orders have been given to all our public ships to seize American vessels engaged in the slave trade and bring them in for adjudication, and I have the gratification to state that not one so employed has been discovered, and there is good reason to believe that our flag is now seldom, if at all, disgraced by that traffic. It is a source of great satisfaction that we are always enabled to refer to the conduct of our Navy with pride and commendation. As a means of national defense it enjoys the public confidence, and is steadily assuming additional importance. It is submitted, whether a more efficient and equally economical organization of it might not in several respects be effected. It is supposed that higher grades than now exist by law would be useful. They would afford well-merited rewards to those who have long and faithfully served their country, present the best incentives to good conduct, and the best means of ensuring a proper discipline, destroy the inequality in that respect between military and naval services, and relieve our officers from many inconveniences and mortifications which occur when our vessels meet those of other nations, ours being the only service in which such grades do not exist. A report of the Postmaster General, which accompanies this communication, will show the present state of the Post Office Department and its general operations for some years past. There is established by law 88,600 miles of post roads, in which the mail is now transported 85,700 miles, and contracts have been made for its transportation in all the established routes, with one or two exceptions. There are 5,240 post offices in the Union, and as many postmasters. The gross amount of postage which accrued from the 1st of July, 1822, to the 1st of July, 1823, was $1,114,345.12. During the same period, the expenditures of the Post Office Department amounted to $1,169,885.51, and consisted of the following items, viz. Compensation to postmasters, $353,995.98, incidental expenses, $30,866.37, transportation of the mail, $784,600.08, payments into the treasury, $423.08. Point. In the 1st of July last, there was due to the department from postmasters $135,245.28, from light postmasters and contractors $256,749.31, making a total amount of balances due to the department of $391,994.59. These balances embrace all delinquencies of postmasters and contractors which have taken place since the organization of the department. There was due by the department to contractors on the 1st of July last $26,548.64. The transportation of the mail within 5 years past has been greatly extended, and the expenditures of the department proportionably increased. Although the postage which has accrued within the last 3 years has fallen short of the expenditures $262,821.46, it appears that collections have been made from the outstanding balances to meet the principal part of the current demands. It is estimated that not more than $250,000 of the above balances can be collected, and that a considerable part of this sum can only be realized by a resort to legal process. Some improvement in the receipts for postage is expected. A prompt attention to the collection of monies received by postmasters, it is believed, will enable the department to continue its operations without aid from the Treasury, unless the expenditures shall be increased by the establishment of new mail routes. A revision of some parts of the post office law may be necessary, and it is submitted whether it would not be proper to provide for the appointment of postmasters, where the compensation exceeds a certain amount, by nomination to the Senate, as other officers of the general government are appointed. Having communicated my views to Congress at the commencement of the last session respecting the encouragement which ought to be given to our manufactures and the principle in which it should be founded, I have only to add that those views remain unchanged, and that the present state of those countries with which we have the most immediate political relations and greatest commercial intercourse tends to confirm them. Under this impression, I recommend a review of the tariff for the purpose of affording such additional protection to those articles which we are prepared to manufacture, or which are more immediately connected with the defense and independence of the country. The actual state of the public accounts furnishes additional evidence of the efficiency of the present system of accountability in relation to the public expenditure. Of the monies drawn from the Treasury, since the 4th of March, 1817, the sum remaining unaccounted for on the 30th of September last is more than $1,500,000 less than on the 30th of September preceding, and during the same period a reduction of nearly $1,000,000 has been made in the amount of the unsettled accounts for monies advanced previously to the 4th of March, 1817. It will be obvious that in proportion as the mass of accounts of the latter description is diminished by settlement, the difficulty of settling the residue is increased from the consideration that in many instances it can be obtained only by legal process. For more precise details in this subject, I refer to a report from the first controller of the Treasury. The sum which was appropriated at the last session for the repairs of the Cumberland Road has been applied with good effect to that object. A final report has not yet been received from the agent who was appointed to superintend it. As soon as it is received, it shall be communicated to Congress. Many patriotic and enlightened citizens who have made the subject an object of particular investigation have suggested an improvement of still greater importance. They are of opinion that the waters of the Chesapeake and Ohio may be connected together by one continued canal, and at an expense far short of the value and importance of the object to be obtained. If this could be accomplished, it is impossible to calculate the beneficial consequences which would result from it. A great portion of the produce of the very fertile country through which it would pass would find a market through that channel. Troops might be moved with great facility in war, with cannon and every kind of munition, and in either direction. Connecting the Atlantic with the Western country in a line passing through the seat of the national government, it would contribute essentially to strengthen the bond of union itself. Believing, as I do, that Congress possess the right to appropriate money for such a national object, the jurisdiction remaining to the states through which the canal would pass, I submit it to your consideration, whether it may not be advisable to authorize by an adequate appropriation the employment of a suitable number of the officers of the Corps of Engineers to examine the unexplored ground during the next season and to report their opinion thereon. It will likewise be proper to extend their examination to the several routes through which the waters of the Ohio may be connected by canals with those of Lake Erie. As the Cumberland Road will require annual repairs, and Congress have not thought it expedient to recommend to the states an amendment to the Constitution for the purpose of vesting in the United States a power to adopt and execute a system of internal improvement, it is also submitted to your consideration whether it may not be expedient to authorize the executive to enter into an arrangement with the several states through which the road passes to establish tolls, each within its limits, for the purpose of defraying the expense of future repairs and of providing also by suitable penalties for its protection against future injuries. The Act of Congress of the 7th of May, 1822, appropriated the sum of $22,700 for the purpose of erecting two piers, as a shelter for vessels from ice near Cape Hamilton, Delaware Bay. To effect the object of the act, the officers of the Board of Engineers, with Commodore Bainbridge, were directed to prepare plans and estimates of piers sufficient to answer the purpose intended by the act. It appears by their report, which accompanies the documents from the War Department, that the appropriation is not adequate to the purpose intended, and as the piers would be of great service both to the navigation of the Delaware Bay and the protection of vessels in the adjacent parts of the coast, I submit for the consideration of Congress whether additional and sufficient appropriation should not be made.
The Board of Engineers were also directed to examine and survey the entrance of the harbor of the port of Presqu'île, in Pennsylvania, in order to make an estimate of the expense of removing the obstructions to the entrance, with a plan of the best mode of effecting the same, under the appropriation for that purpose by Act of Congress passed 3rd of March last. The report of the board accompanies the papers from the War Department, and is submitted for the consideration of Congress. A strong hope has been long entertained, founded in the heroic struggle of the Greeks, that they would succeed in their contest and resume their equal station among the nations of the earth. It is believed that the whole civilized world take a deep interest in their welfare. Although no power has declared in their favor, yet none, according to our information, has taken part against them. Their cause and their name have protected them from dangers which might ere this have overwhelmed any other people. The ordinary calculations of interest and of acquisition with a view to aggrandizement, which mingles so much in the transactions of nations, seem to have had no effect in regard to them. From the facts which have come to our knowledge, there is good cause to believe that their enemy has lost forever all dominion over them, that Greece will become again an independent nation. That she may obtain that rank is the object of our most ardent wishes. It was stated at the commencement of the last session that a great effort was then making in Spain and Portugal to improve the condition of the people of those countries, and that it appeared to be conducted with extraordinary moderation. It need scarcely be remarked that the result has been so far very different from what was then anticipated. Of events in that quarter of the globe, with which we have so much intercourse and from which we derive our origin, we have always been anxious and interested spectators. The citizens of the United States cherish sentiments the most friendly in favor of the liberty and happiness of their fellow men in that side of the Atlantic. In the wars of the European powers in matters relating to themselves we have never taken any part, nor does it comport with our policy so to do. It is only when our rights are invaded or seriously menaced that we resent injuries or make preparation for our defense. With the movements in this hemisphere we are of necessity more immediately connected, and by causes which must be obvious to all enlightened and impartial observers. The political system of the Allied powers is essentially different in this respect from that of America. This difference proceeds from that which exists in their respective governments, and to the defense of our own, which has been achieved by the loss of so much blood and treasure, and matured by the wisdom of their most enlightened citizens, and under which we have enjoyed unexampled felicity, this whole nation is devoted. We owe it, therefore, to candor and to the amicable relations existing between the United States and those powers to declare that we should consider any attempt on their part to extend their system to any portion of this hemisphere as dangerous to our peace and safety. With the existing colonies or dependencies of any European power we have not interfered and shall not interfere. But with the governments who have declared their independence and maintained it, and whose independence we have, in great consideration and in just principles, acknowledged, we could not view any interposition for the purpose of oppressing them, or controlling in any other manner their destiny, by any European power in any other light, than as the manifestation of an unfriendly disposition toward the United States. In the war between those new governments and Spain we declared our neutrality at the time of their recognition, and to this we have adhered, and shall continue to adhere, provided no change shall occur which, in the judgment of the competent authorities of this government, shall make a corresponding change on the part of the United States indispensable to their security. The late events in Spain and Portugal show that Europe is still unsettled.
Of this important fact, no stronger proof can be adduced than that the Allied powers should have thought it proper, in any principle satisfactory to themselves, to have interposed by force in the internal concerns of Spain. To what extent such interposition may be carried, in the same principle, is a question in which all independent powers whose governments differ from theirs are interested, even those most remote, and surely none more so than the United States.
Our policy in regard to Europe, which was adopted at an early stage of the wars which have so long agitated that quarter of the globe, nevertheless remains the same, which is, not to interfere in the internal concerns of any of its powers, to consider the government de facto as the legitimate government for us, to cultivate friendly relations with it, and to preserve those relations by a frank, firm, and manly policy, meeting in all instances the just claims of every power, submitting to injuries from none. But in regard to those continents, circumstances are eminently and conspicuously different. It is impossible that the Allied powers should extend their political system to any portion of either continent without endangering our peace and happiness, nor can anyone believe that our southern brethren, if left to themselves, would adopt it of their own accord. It is equally impossible, therefore, that we should behold such interposition in any form with indifference. If we look to the comparative strength and resources of Spain and those new governments, and their distance from each other, it must be obvious that she can never subdue them. It is still the true policy of the United States to leave the parties to themselves, in the hope that other powers will pursue the same course. If we compare the present condition of our Union with its actual state at the close of our revolution, the history of the world furnishes no example of a progress in improvement in all the important circumstances which constitute the happiness of a nation which bears any resemblance to it. At the first epoch our population did not exceed 3 million. By the last census it amounted to about 10 million, and, what is more extraordinary, it is almost altogether native, for the immigration from other countries has been inconsiderable at the first epoch. Half the territory within our acknowledged limits was uninhabited and a wilderness. Since then new territory has been acquired of vast extent, comprising within it many rivers, particularly the Mississippi, the navigation of which to the ocean was of the highest importance to the original states. Over this territory our population has expanded in every direction, and new states have been established almost equal in number to those which formed the first bond of our Union. This expansion of our population and accession of new states to our Union have had the happiest effect in all its highest interests. That it has eminently augmented our resources and added to our strength and respectability, as a power is admitted by all. But it is not in these important circumstances only that this happy effect is felt. It is manifest that by enlarging the basis of our system and increasing the number of states the system itself has been greatly strengthened in both its branches. Consolidation and disunion have thereby been rendered equally impracticable. Each government, confiding in its own strength, has less to apprehend from the other, and in consequence each, enjoying a greater freedom of action, is rendered more efficient for all the purposes for which it was instituted. It is unnecessary to treat here of the vast improvement made in the system itself by the adoption of this constitution and of its happy effect in elevating the character and in protecting the rights of the nation as well as of individuals. To what, then, do we owe these blessings? It is known to all that we derive them from the excellence of our institutions. Ought we not, then, to adopt every measure which may be necessary to perpetuate them? James Monroe. Special Messages. Washington City,
December 7, 1823. To the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States. By an act of the last session of Congress, it was made the duty of the accounting officers of the Treasury to adjust and settle the accounts of Daniel B. Tompkins, late governor of the state of New York, in principles of equity and justice, subject to the revision and final decision of the President of the United States. The accounting officers have, in compliance with this act, reported to me a balance of $35,190 in favor of Governor Tompkins, which report I have had under consideration, together which has claimed to an additional allowance, and should have decided in the same, before the present time, had I not delayed my decision at his request. From the view which I have taken of the subject, I am satisfied, considering all the circumstances of the case, that a larger sum ought to be allowed him than that reported by the accounting officers of the Treasury. No appropriation, however, having been made by the act, and it appearing by recent information from him that the sum reported would afford him an essential accommodation at this time, the subject is submitted to the consideration of Congress with a view to that object. James Monroe. To the Senate of the United States. I transmit to the Senate, for its advice and consent as to the ratification, a treaty lately concluded with the Seminole Indians in Florida, whereby a cession of territory is made to the United States. James Monroe. December 15, 1823. Washington, December 23, 1823. To the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States. I herewith transmit to Congress a statement by William Lambert, explanatory of his astronomical calculations with a view to establish the longitude of the capital. James Monroe. Washington, December 31, 1823. To the House of Representatives of the United States. I transmit to the House of Representatives a report from the Secretary of State, with accompanying documents, containing the information requested by the resolution of the House of the 19th instant, relating to the condition and future prospects of the Greeks. James Monroe.